All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started, guys. Looks like enough of you are in here. This is Musketeer Report Live. I'll try to answer any questions that you guys have for an hour. I'm testing this out to see how it goes. If it works, great. If not, we'll never do it again. And I'm sorry you had to look at me for an hour or whatever. Basically, just if you're watching this from musketeerreport.com somehow, then click the link below that says join the live event. And you can ask your questions. If you're already in the system here, the Google Hangout system, you can see in the bottom right-hand corner of there, it should say ask a new question or add a new question. Just click that and you can ask whatever questions you want. If you like someone else's question, you see a question over there on the right-hand column, you like it, you want to hear my thoughts on it, go ahead and click that plus one button and that will bump it up to the top and let me know that more people are interested in that question. So, other than that, I think that's the only housekeeping stuff I have to do. Go ahead and file your questions. If you're trying to play a drinking game with this, I would imagine that for all the new viewers that keep coming in, every time someone asks about Xavier Simpson or maybe Markelle Fultz, you can go ahead and take a drink. I think that'll work pretty well. So we'll get started here with the questions. And let's just go to the important stuff right away here. Is Joe Flacco elite? This question from Chris Bacon. You know, honestly, if you read PFT Commenter, I think he nailed it the last game of the season there. Flacco was too elite for the Ravens. That might actually be their problem, is that he is too elite, and he played too well and pissed Tom Brady off. So I definitely think Joe Flacco is both elite and not elite at the same time. I subscribe to that theory. Can't wait to see what he has in store for us. All right, here we go. Getting into some Xavier stuff. From XU Bob, who posted this on the wall instead of the event, so I slid it in here for him. He asked, knowing that everyone wants X to get Simpson or Gooden, do you think either will happen? If not, what is the backup plan? Do I think either will happen? I'd say there's a chance for either one. Yeah, I think they could land Xavier Simpson or Quentin Gooden. Those are two of their top targets. They're in a good situation with both. The backup plan for those are all the guys that we've been talking about on the message board. Howard Washington Jr. just committed to Butler, so he's off the board. But there are still a couple of other guys out there with Tony Carr, Shamari Pons, some names like that. I don't know if there's specifically a backup plan for these guys, but there's a whole group of guards that Xavier is recruiting right now. All right, this one from Mike. He wants to know who is going to have a breakout year for Xavier next year or who will make the biggest jump. And he has some other questions I'll address in a second. Starting with that first one, though, I can't say Edmund Sumner or Mackinday London, I don't think, since they redshirted and we really never got a chance to see what they brought. I'm going to go with Trayvon Blewett. And actually, it's going to be tough for him to improve on his numbers from last year because he posted pretty good statistics for the year. But I thought he faded as the year went on. And he never really became the go-to scorer throughout the season that I think he's going to be throughout his career. So if I had to pick one guy who's going to make the biggest jump and have a breakout year, I think Trayvon Blewett is going to become that go-to player for Xavier this year. So I guess Trayvon would be my answer for that question. Your second question, Mike, odd Xavier plays UD in the Orlando tourney. Very little. I don't think Xavier or UD will play for a long time, and I imagine they probably won't be paired up in that Orlando tourney either. Predictions on next commitment for the 2016 class. I'll stick with Xavier Simpson. I've been saying this. I said it before Tyreek Jones committed, and I still think that he's the guy they're closest to landing. Now, will they get him? Will he actually be the next guy to commit? You never know with this type of stuff. But if you had to ask me who are they closest to landing next, I would have to say Xavier Simpson, just because they've been so close, had that close relationship with him for so long. I think that would be the guy. All right, we got a question here about Markelle Fultz, our first one. I'll go ahead and take this one from Michael Tucker. He asks, where does Xavier stand with Markelle Fultz, and will he possibly make an official visit here? Well, the second part of your question, no, I don't know if he'll make an official visit here. He's already visited three times and visited Xavier more than any other school that's recruiting him. So I don't know if he really needs to visit again. If he is going to commit, maybe he'll come back and visit and make his commitment then. But I don't think he really needs to make an official visit here. And I don't think he'll use one up on Xavier since he's already been here so much. In terms of where do they stand, they're in the mix. Markelle Fultz is a top-level talent. He's an elite guy. He's got tons of high major interest. I think if you look at the schools that are also in the mix, Louisville, Arizona, two of probably the top programs that Xavier's battling against. North Carolina has recently started showing more interest, although I don't think they've offered yet. So I'd say those are kind of the schools, but Xavier's right there. Mike Pegues has done an incredible job of keeping Xavier in this one the whole time. When we first started reporting on Markelle Fultz and Xavier recruiting him maybe a year and a half ago, I mentioned many times that this is a pipe dream. It's a long shot. And yet Xavier's still right there in the mix and in probably his top four or five schools, I would think. So they're in as good of a spot as they can ask to be. Now, will they end up landing him? I have no idea, because there's schools that are big time schools right around him that are recruiting him heavily, specifically like Georgetown and Maryland. And there's a lot of programs that are battling for Markelle Fultz. So we'll see what happens there. But I think Xavier is in a really good spot. Here's another question on Fultz from Kyle Skeldon. He said, watching Fultz's mixtape, it seems like he has a good feel to his game. Is there another player that he reminds you of? Yeah, I've said this a lot on the board, actually. I think he's a more athletic Devontae Smith-Rivera, the guard from Georgetown. Obviously had committed to Xavier and decommitted back in the 2012 class when Xavier was recruiting him. And I think the comparison between them is that they're such good bucket getters from the mid-range. They both shoot it really well. Fultz might even shoot it a little bit better from three-point range than DSR did at the same age. But DSR, obviously, a solid three-point shooter, but really just has all those subtleties to his game in the mid-range. Those lean-ins, the spin move at the free throw line that he seems to always make. Markelle has a lot of that stuff. So if I had to compare him to a current player that a lot of you guys are familiar with, I think I would go with Devontae Smith-Rivera. But again, I think Markelle's a little bit more athletic. And both of them are kind of those combo guards. Like at the highest level, Markelle Fultz is a point guard. If he wants to play in the NBA, he has to be a point guard. Now, if he goes to Xavier, he's probably going to play the two because he's such a good scorer. They'll probably pair him with another guard. He's 6'4", 6'5", and a decent athlete. So I think he'll probably play the two if he in college and especially at Xavier. But if he wants to play in the pros, he's a point guard at the highest level, and he is a skilled guy. So I think he compares to DSR in that way as well. Thanks for the question, though. We'll keep it moving here. Looks like there's one here about Sean O'Mara that was submitted earlier as well on the wall that I plugged in. And I think this was Kyle Skeldon again. I've heard a bunch of MAC references to Sean O'Mara having been limited by not playing basketball year-round during high school, specifically around weight training. How do you think playing hoops year-round will transform his game from freshman to sophomore year? And there was some more to that, but it got cut off. So I guess the biggest thing, well, first of all, what we got to realize, right, is when we ask coaches all these questions, especially when you're talking about a new class, and last year's was a really big class in 2014. There were a lot of guys in it. So we're asking Mac all these questions, and he has to say something about each of them and tries to come up with something different about each of them. This was an easy thing to say, right? Like, he hasn't hit his upside. He hasn't reached his full potential yet because he's been playing football and hasn't been able to focus on basketball. So if you're specifically asking me, like, what skills that he hadn't developed yet, I don't know. I don't think that's really that big of a deal. I do think the weight training thing has some merit to it, because if you're playing two sports in high school, especially basketball and football, that are opposite like that, you really never have that like 3 or 4 or 5 month period off where you can seriously weight train and just try to reshape your body or really get hard after the weights. And Sean was such a big, strong kid in high school. He really didn't need to do that to still be a dominant player in both sports. Now heading into college, that obviously changes, and he had, it was his job to get bigger and stronger last year. He didn't play a lot of minutes, so that was his main focus. And I know Matt Jennings worked with him all year. I think Sean's going to be a horse. I think it's really going to make a difference that he was able to work so hard on his body and adding strength in the off season. I think it's going to be really big. And now how that will translate to the court, I think Sean's going to have a nice year. I expect him to play behind James and Jalen as kind of that third big man. And I think honestly he'll push James far for minutes. I think he'll be right there in the mix. I think he's a little bit better offensively on the block than James is. And he's a tough kid. I mean, last year he had a really difficult year. When you think about, he's going up against a Matt Stainbrook a Jalen Reynolds and a James Farr. And all three of those guys do very, very different things, both on offense and on defense. And he was having to play against them interchangeably on a scout team day in and day out and learning how to play against those different guys. So I think that the year he had to learn last year while he was getting a few minutes here and there in the game, dangling the carrot a little bit, I think that'll really help him. I think he's going to make a big jump this year. And maybe it won't show in terms of scoring. I don't know that it'll be a guy who, like, leads them in scoring. But I think the toughness and the rebounding and minutes he's going to provide when Xavier needs it to spell James or Jalen is going to be big. All right, this is kind of an interesting question about the shoe companies from Mike Hammersmith. Sweet last name. He says, it seems like Under Armour has developed a big presence on the AAU circuit. Do you think that they can catch up to Adidas in terms of college hoops influence? Any impact to recruiting for Nike schools? I'm not really sure what that last part of your question means. But as far as Under Armour goes, I think they've already been catching up to Adidas. I don't know what the numbers say in terms of, like, how many people are buying Under Armour basketball shoes versus Adidas. But if you're talking about, like, which prospects are playing for Under Armour AAU teams and which prospects are playing for Adidas AAU teams, I think Under Armour has already caught up and closed the margin. They're spending a lot of money. That's the biggest deal here, is they're spending Nike-like money. And if you're asking what I mean by that, it's not just the way they sponsor teams or the tournaments that they have. It's also – and I won't put out the exact numbers because I haven't, you know, it'd be irresponsible to report on this when I don't know the exact figures. But last year when we were down at the Under Armour Nationals Tournament in Atlanta at the Suwanee Sports Academy, the biggest thing going around there was a couple Nike programs who were kind of in flux, big-time Nike programs. And the big news that weekend was how Under Armour was trying to wrangle these AAU guys, the guys who run the AAU programs, away from Nike and bring them over to Under Armour. And we're talking about deals. These guys were going to be making salaries in the six figures just to run an AAU team. And that's what Under Armour was offering them, that and plenty more. That I, again, I don't want to get into specifics because I don't know, but I know for a fact it was well over six figures, the money that they were offering as a salary to a guy who was going to come and bring his AAU program over under Under Armour. So this thing is crazy how much money, how big the grassroots basketball circuit has gotten. And I do think it's important for these brands. I do think it is a big deal. But when you look at, I mean, even the NBA Top 100 camp that I went to two weeks ago, they were sponsored by Under Armour. All the kids were wearing Under Armour, you know, jerseys and Under Armour shoes. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few years. I think Under Armour has made some good purchases. Obviously, Cincinnati just switched over to Under Armour. That went through yesterday or the day before. So it's interesting, the shoe market there. I think, to me, Under Armour has passed up Adidas in my mind in terms of prestige already. Here we go. Does X get Fultz? Again, I mean, I don't know. If you're putting a gun to my head, probably not. I think that's going to be a tough one to get. But they're right in the mix. They've done a great job, as I talked about before. What kind of offseason is Miles Davis having? What does he need to do to take over at point? Well, EJ, it sounds like you're probably not a subscriber of MusketeerReport.com, because we've been talking a little bit about some of the offseasons for guys and the ones at least who have been on campus. And Miles is one of the ones we have talked about. He's in great shape. His body, the last year, in between his freshman and sophomore year, he made a jump in terms of his athleticism and improving his body. But I thought he really just lost some weight. This year, he looks like he's reshaped his body. He looks different. His body's a little more of a V instead of just kind of a round guy. So I think he's done a lot of work. I don't think they're fighting him as much in the offseason. You know, and I mean that fighting in terms of they're not having to push him as much to get up and run at the track over at Withrow every day or whatever the workout may be for that day. I think he's doing a lot of that on his own. He's committed to getting better, and I think he's definitely gotten himself into great shape. What does he need to do to take over at point? I mean, the coaches need to let him play point. I don't know. He's got the skill level. I think he showed that last year. Does he have deficiencies? Yes. If teams are going to come up and press him, is that going to be an issue? Sure, but you have multiple ball handlers. You can do it by committee. It might be a situation where if a team's pressing, then Xavier picks on the weakest link on the defensive end, because you have three or four different guys who can bring the ball up depending on what lineup you're playing. It could be Trayvon bringing the ball up for him if it's really that big of an issue. I just don't think – I mean, when you look at last year, the amount of teams that pressed Xavier, it was, you know, two or three teams that really press, and that was like their system and what they do well. I just don't see it that be the press and being pressured being that big of an issue. I'm more worried about a guy who can run the offense, who has some feel, and getting the best five offensive players on the court at one time. And I think to do that, at least initially, they're probably going to have to play Miles at the point. But to answer your question, I don't think he really needs to do a whole lot to do so. All right. Appreciate the questions. We'll keep it going here. Again, if you're watching at musketeerreport.com, you're seeing this video screen, you can see and hear me, but you are not able to ask questions, you don't understand how to do that, click the link below that says join live event. You can click on that. It'll bring up this whole platform that Google has where you can submit your questions to me. Again, we'll be doing this till about 8:30, maybe longer if you guys have that many questions, or shorter if you don't. But appreciate you guys who have joined us. Looks like we've got a decent crowd in here, and the questions are continuing to come in at a decent rate. So I appreciate all your guys' participation. Who will be the starting point guard at the beginning of the season, middle of the season, and end of the season? From Lauren Brown. Well, Lauren, that is a good question, and another one that we've been talking a lot about at MusketeerReport.com on the message boards. So here's my take on this whole thing, and this is subject to change because practice hasn't even started. I haven't been able to see, you know, the jump that Larry Austin has made. I haven't been able to see how comfortable Edmund Sumner is with the offense and all that. But my guess, beginning of the season, like we just talked about, Miles Davis will be the point guard of this team, because I think at the beginning of next year, your best lineup is going to include Miles Davis, it's going to include Remy Abel, and it's going to include Trayvon Blewett. And to play all those three guys, Miles kind of has to play the point. So, I mean, I just don't see a lineup where Remy and Miles don't start, at least at the beginning of the year. Now, by the middle of the season, things will be interesting, or even the end of the season, things will get interesting, because I think Edmund Sumner is probably the most talented guard on the roster. And that's, you know, I'm talking about guards, him, Miles, Larry. I do think that Edmund has a chance to take over that point guard position by middle of the season, or possibly end of the season, especially if things don't go real well for Miles early. But my guess is Miles starts out and then we go from there. I think long-term, Edmund's going to be so good as a playmaker, and he's 6'6 now, that they're going to want to play him as a two. I don't think they want to play him as a one necessarily. So my guess is that Miles and Larry will play a lot of the minutes at the one, and Edmund will back up at the two. But again, Edmund could force their hand. He's really talented. It's going to be interesting to see how far along he is. All right, this next question from Brian Martins. Our rival UC made some news this week with some recruits. How good are their new commits? And was Xavier actively trying to get any of those guys? So here's the thing. Kyle Washington was the transfer from NC State that they got, and Xavier definitely was trying to get him. They were in the mix real early, but that was kind of a weird recruitment, and no one had a great feel for where they stood. UC had a good connection and kept plugging away and ended up landing him. And I thought he was going to go to Marquette, to be quite honest with you. So that was, I thought that was a nice get for him. Now, he's a guy that got beat out by Malik Abu last year at NC State, and Malik Abu was a freshman. Kyle was a sophomore. I think Malik Abu is really good, so I don't know that that's necessarily a huge indictment on Washington's talent level. I think he's going to be a player that contributes. He'll have to sit a year, then he'll contribute right away in 2016-17. He's a guy that can stretch the floor a little bit. He's good defensively. Not super tough, but he's a solid big man. And pairing him up with Gary Clark, I think that'll make a nice 1-2 tandem after Octavius Ellis leaves for UC. Their other commits, Nysir Brooks was a guy, and this is, you know, the UC people are making such a big deal out of how he visited Xavier after he visited UC and then committed back to UC. But this was a guy that really barely on Xavier's roster. I mean, Luke Murray had been recruiting him at Rhode Island, but I think the consensus was that he wasn't going to be a guy Xavier continued to recruit. They were in town and called if they could visit. So of course Xavier let him, but I think that whole thing was blown out of proportion. If there's one guy that you're not worried about UC landing out of this mix, it was Nysir Brooks. He can block shots. He can rebound. He's a big guy. I don't think it's necessarily a bad get for UC, but I don't think it's something I'd be super worried about if I was a Xavier fan. The interesting one is Jaron Cumberland, because Xavier had been in the mix off and on since this kid was in eighth grade. It's really just not what they needed in 2016, and they had pretty much been done recruiting him for a while. The only thing, they had kind of picked things back up because he and Xavier Simpson were talking about being a package deal, and not necessarily that they would be, but that it might be nice and that it might help if you landed Xavier first, which Xavier University thought they might be in a position to do so. It might be easier to then land Jaron Cumberland. And at that point, you start wondering, well, you know, maybe we do want Jaron because he's a top 100 kid. He's a tank. He's built like a tank. He can really, really score. I have a lot of questions. I don't think his handle's great. His feet are horrible. He maneuvers like a tank, just like he's built. And defensively, I don't know what he guards really. UC has a lot of good defenders, and that's what they do. Mick teaches that well. So they should be able to hide him as long as Mick is okay with giving up some things, understanding that he's not going to defend like a lot of his guards do. And just, you know, giving up some speed and athleticism in exchange for a guy who can really put the ball in the basket might be something that's a good idea for UC. So I completely get why they got Jaron Cumberland. And I think that's going to be probably the most interesting guy that they got out of those three. I really don't know which way it'll go. I could see it going either way for Jaron. I think he could be really good at UC's level, or I could see him flaming out and just not quite being good enough on both ends and not being a good enough athlete necessarily to become a big-time scorer. A lot of people are comparing him to Sean Kilpatrick, and I mean a lot of UC fans who are hopeful are comparing him to Sean Kilpatrick, and I get that because a bigger body, not a great athlete, and a shooter. I don't think he'll be quite that good. Obviously, Sean Kilpatrick was really, really good, but I think Jaron's a nice kid. I think he'll be a solid scorer for UC and something that they were lacking. I just don't think it was something that Xavier needed in this class, and that's why they weren't really recruiting Jaron very hard there for the last, you know, 6 months to a year. Appreciate the question. Those were some good ones. Another one here from Bob Schnurr. Any surprise that Mac wasn't mentioned much in job openings this past offseason? Where were you, Bob? Mac wasn't mentioned. Did you forget the Florida job? Did we not do that? I remember being on the radio talking about Florida. I think he was mentioned. Other than that, I don't think there were a ton of jobs that were really jobs that he would be a candidate for. So, like I've said, I said this when we were talking about the Florida thing. I said it on Lance McAllister's show. I think the big job, the dream job, is Louisville. That's the one to worry about if you're a Xavier fan. If that comes open in the next few years, I think he'd definitely be a candidate for that one. I don't know if he could get it, but I think it's certainly one he would like to get. Thoughts on the addition of Luke Murray? This one from X Steve. I don't know Luke all that well yet. Obviously, he's only been on campus for a little bit, and a lot of that time I haven't been up there because there's not a whole lot going on. But it seems, I mean, look, he's already made an impact. When you talk about landing Tyreek Jones, he was the lead recruiter for him. There are some other guys. A lot of times it takes a year when you land a new assistant coach. He has to change the guys he's recruiting a little bit, maybe up his level, especially coming from somewhere like Rhode Island. For Luke's hit the ground running. I mean, there's several prospects that he was already recruiting that maybe were a little too good to land at Rhode Island that he maybe has a better chance to land at Xavier. So he has them already in the mix for some 2016 guys, obviously already landed Tyreek Jones, and I think he'll have a big 2017 class. As far as what he brings to the table in terms of as a coach, I really don't know. I haven't talked to a whole lot of people that know him on that type of level, and I just haven't seen him in action yet. Dealing with the guys. So they'll definitely check back. I know, Steve, you're a guy who's on the message board all the time. So check back, obviously, when we start practice up here in a few months, and things will definitely – I'll have more to report on Luke and the rest of the assistants. And from Snow, what is your hat size? That is one large dome. It's just a – it's a few sizes bigger than yours, Brian. It's actually a 7.5. So – if you can believe that, I imagine you're somewhere around 7 3/8 maybe. So I'm a 7.5 guy. What are your thoughts on the new rules and how will this affect different styles of play across the country? What is the biggest pro and con when it comes to Xavier with the new rules? I don't think the rules really address the problem. I mean, specifically we're talking about the shot clock thing, I guess, is the biggest rule change that people seem to think matters. And I just don't think it's addressing any issues at all. I don't think it changes much. I think it helps defenses a little bit, especially when Xavier was playing like that 1-3-1. If they stick with that 1-3-1, I thought the best thing that the 1-3-1 did was confuse other teams. And so they'd come across half court and not necessarily know what to run, what offense they should be in, whether they should be running man stuff or zone stuff or exactly what zone stuff, or if they should just shoot the wide open three-pointer on the wing that Xavier was giving them right off the bat. I think it confused teams, and it took them some time to even figure out what they were going to get into. And so now you take 5 seconds off of that with the new shot clock rule, it becomes a little bit more interesting. You've already cut them down even farther. So I think that's where it makes the biggest difference is if Xavier still plays that 1-3-1 at all. I think it could really help them there. In terms of their offense, they play with a 24-second shot clock or less than that or something at practice every day. I can't remember many shot clock violations throughout the year. It's not like they're a slow, methodical system. I don't think it really changes a whole lot for them offensively. So that's how I'd address the biggest pros and cons with Xavier. In terms of how it affects across the country, again, I don't think it'll add a little bit more pace to the game, just slightly, I think. But really, I don't know that it leads to better shots. I think it helps the defense more so than anything because you have a little less time on the shot clock. And you just get some worse shots, maybe a few more shot clock violations. Like a team like UC who runs that matchup zone that's real confusing, I think that's a team that this rule really benefits, and it really helps their defense, not anyone's offense. All right, we're low on questions here, guys. Only two more left. So if you have any questions, you want to get them in, send them in here now. We're almost a half an hour in. I'll stop it at 8 o'clock if we're out of questions. That's fine with me. But just go, if you do have questions, I want to make sure I answer them all. So go ahead and get those in. I'm going to tweet the link out one more time here for everybody to join. Go ahead and take a sip of your beverage while you're waiting for me here. All right. Another one from Lauren Brown here. What should fan expectations for March be for this season? Best case, worst case, most likely. I've said this a few times. I think this whole season is going to be very similar to last year's. I think it's a talented team, a team that fans are going to expect a lot out of, and a team that fans are going to be frustrated with early on because while you do return a lot of talent from last year's team, you're losing the two guys that ran the entire offense at the end of the year, D. Davis and Matt Stainbrook. And while D didn't do a ton of scoring, he was crucial to that run at the end of the season. And Xavier ran everything through Stainbrook at the end. They really did. He was a huge part of their offense. And I just don't think it's going to be, even though we know who the go-to players are, even though we know it's going to be Jalen and it's going to be Trayvon Blewett, but there's still, you know, Miles David. There's a lot of pieces here and a lot of guys who can do different things. I still think there's going to be that feeling out process throughout the beginning of the year. When you think back to some of the moments last year, like the DePaul game even, where they should win, but they don't know who that go-to guy is there at the end. Any of the games that came down to the last minute in regulation or went into overtime, I think they really struggled to know who their go-to guys were early on in the season or what plays they were going to run. And not just the players, but the coaches were figuring that out too. And that takes time. Fans don't want it to, but it does take time. And on the defensive end, it takes time too. I think they'll be better on the defensive end this year just addition by subtraction in terms of Stainbrook. He was so good offensively, but he was a real albatross on defense. I think they'll be better just going Jalen and James down low. That'll make them so much more mobile and give them so much more length and rim protection in the lane that I think they'll be in a much better shape defensively than they were last year. But offensively, I think it's going to take some time. I think they're going to lose some games that they shouldn't. So I think they'll come back into, you know, they'll be the last few games or the last few weeks of the Big East season, they'll be on the bubble. And they'll have the chance to play their way either out of the tournament or right onto that play-in game like they did this year, or they'll have a chance to make a run and earn a six seed like they did this year. So it'll be the same exact position that they're in, and it'll really be come down to how do they finish those last 2 weeks of the Big East season and how do they fare in the Big East tournament. And again, the difference is hopefully the Big East has another good year in non-conference and the RPI is high again. The difference is when you were in the A-10, you couldn't afford to lose those games early in the season in the non-conference that you weren't supposed to lose. Now Xavier can do that. They can lose a game or two that they're not supposed to lose and make it up because they're going to play so much of a tougher conference schedule. And that's huge. I think it'll be very similar to last year. So for in terms of March, where they'll end up, if I had to make a guess, I'd say it like a 6 or 7 seed once again. And I think, you know, second round of the tournament is a realistic expectation for this team. But it's going to take a lot to get back to there. Or they could easily be better as well. They could be really good and click right away and really develop as the year goes on. And maybe they'll be better than I think. But I expect this team to be very similar to last year's. When does the next signing period start? Any more commits coming in the near future? The early signing period is in November. Any more commits coming in the near future? They'd like that. They always like to add more commits in the near future. I really can't make a prediction on that. A lot of guys are waiting until after the July evaluation period this month, play out these next 3 weeks of AAU, let all the coaches get out and see them, kind of get those final offers, know who's interested, and then make their final list after that. And then they'll make a decision probably within the next, you know, 4 to 6 months. So anytime between the end of July and midway through the high school season, I think it's certainly possible that they could be adding more commits. Who do you feel might be your most improved player this year, your player that will surprise fans, and which bench player will have the biggest impact? That seems like a lot of ways to ask similar questions. Who do you feel might be your most improved player this year? Like I said, I think Trayvon will be the one that stands out. And not that he was bad last year, and it's not going to be easy to greatly improve his numbers from last year, but I think he'll just be that go-to guy, the more of a veteran on the court and more of the guy who give me the ball and let me score 40 points like I did in high school. Not that I'll put up those same type of numbers, but last year he just didn't have that look of the super confident score that I've always seen him be. And I think that'll be where he's at as a sophomore. So I think he'll probably be the guy that I would rank as the most improved. Your player that will surprise fans. Let's go James Farr here. I think James Farr is going to have a really solid senior year. I think the biggest thing about James is he's going to have a role. Like, even if Sean O'Mara gets into like half of his minutes, James is still going to play 15 to 20 minutes, no doubt, for this team. I don't think there's ever going to be a situation where they're trying to figure out a way to not play James Farr like it got to at times last year. I don't think he'll ever shoot the ball as poorly as he did last year. He got in that slump and just couldn't shake it. And it wasn't just from the outside. He couldn't finish layups last year. I don't think that'll happen again. I think the biggest thing for James is give him a role, tell him to go out and be the best rebounder he can possibly be in the Big East Conference, and give him that role every game and let him try to fulfill it. And I think as long as he's doing that, which was pretty much what he did in the Big East tournament and the rest of the postseason last year, I think he'll be fine. And I think he'll really surprise fans because I think a lot of people are down on him after last year. I think he's going to have a solid senior year and improve and look more like the sophomore year James Farr that hit a couple big threes against Cincinnati in the Crosstown Shootout. And which bench player will have the biggest impact? That's a good question. That's a really good question, because I think after Xavier's starting five, which again, I expect to be Miles, Remy, Trayvon, James, and Jalen, you have three guys that could be huge impact players. Edmund Sumner being one of them, JP McCura being the one that I think he doesn't have a great spot to put him in right now because there's sort of guys starting in front of him. But I think JP is a guy that could have a huge sophomore season and be a big time scorer. He impressed me last year. He had some things he really needed to work on, but I think he's got what it takes to be a big time scorer at this level. So I think JP McCura could be the bench player that'll have the biggest impact, or it could be Sean O'Mara. Like I said, I could see Sean O'Mara really eating James minutes, being a more consistent scorer on the block, being a tough guy who can rebound and defend. I think Sean O'Mara could have a really nice year there as well. So, man, that last question is tough. The bench player that have the biggest impact. I guess if you put a gun to my head, I'm going to say JP McCura simply because he's the sophomore out of the group. He's and yeah, Edmund sat out for a year and had time to learn some things, but it's not like playing. It's not like getting into – I mean, JP was playing with a messed up ankle on Madison Square Garden's court last year. So he's been through some things. He gets it a little bit more than those other guys do, I think. I expect a big year out of him. I think he'll be a big contributor. Is Mac hold on, let me put this question up for you guys. This is one you'll want. Bob asks, is Mac a lifer? How do you think the Big East will fare long term? Those are two different questions, I guess. Is Mac a lifer? No. I don't think anybody is a lifer or really should try to be. And I don't think Xavier's a destination job, really. I mean, it's a job you can stay at for a long time and have a really nice career, which Mac is already doing. But at the end of the day, I think there's always going to be a better job than Xavier out there. And that's not, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's not a slight to Xavier. There's just bigger schools with a lot more money and a lot more to offer in terms of fan base and arena and all those types of things. And again, the one I talk about with Chris Mack the most is the Louisville job. How do you think the Big East will fare long term? I think the Big East is a really nice basketball conference. I mean, it is what it is. It's not the Big East that was before. Certainly, you lost some huge programs out of there. But what the Big East is right now, and sometimes I do worry about this for the long-term growth of the league, is that it's so competitive. All the teams really from top to bottom are in the same type of mix. I mean, there's really – even DePaul, I think, is going to be a little bit better. I don't think there's going to be a cellar dweller for this conference. All of them, and even the teams that are going to be consistently towards the bottom, like possibly a DePaul, are competitive. We saw that last year. They're close, and they have the talent. There are teams in the A-10 that just never had the talent to really match up with a school like Xavier or Dayton. Every team in the Big East has Big East-type talent. Now, they might not have the coaching, or they might not have the proper personnel or proper system to make it all work, but they have the talent. I mean, I don't think you can deny that. DePaul last year had a lot of talent and was certainly able to compete with Xavier. So that's my prediction for the league long term, is that it stays competitive like this. I don't know if that's a great thing for the conference, because it's going to be a situation where they always have to perform well in the non-conference to have that high RPI. Otherwise, they're really going to cannibalize each other during the conference season. So it'll be interesting to see how the conference develops, but it's a conference I really like. I really enjoy watching all the teams, and because it is so competitive and those games are so close, there's a lot of excitement and a lot of opportunity for rivalries, even if it's not, you know, a Xavier versus UC crosstown shootout type rivalry. I think there's just a lot of interconference rivalries where, you know, you have good battles with the same teams over and over, to where all these games start to become almost like rivalry games. Early 2017 names to watch. Go to the website. There's a lot of them. We haven't really gotten into that too much. There's not like a hot board because the 2016 class still is such a big deal, and there's still open scholarships for that. Just haven't got into 2017 that much. Now, they've offered some, you know, like Caleb Wesson is one of the big names that they've already offered. And they've sent a decent amount of offers in 2017. I just don't think it's really worth getting into on here too much, just because those names are going to change so much from now until then. And be quite honest, while the staff is recruiting those guys, no real serious names to look at in 2017 that might be close to a commitment or anything. Another one from Steve: is the kid from Cooper a realistic target? Well, Xavier, he's not like on the top of their list or anything for the 2017 class right now. You're talking about Sean McNeil, a kid that plays locally for Cooper High School in Union, Kentucky, 6'4", really, really skilled, really good shooter, and a better athlete than people think. In terms of, does he have a chance to be good enough for Xavier? Yes, he does. He's not at that point yet. I think he's more of a low plus type prospect. He has a couple Division II offers and some low major interest. And now Xavier, he came to team camp, performed really well there. Chris Mack has talked to his high school coach. You know, there's certainly some contact there. They're interested. But it's not a guy that's super close to getting an offer. But I don't think it's unrealistic to say that he could down the line, because I really like his game. I think he's a super smart player. Really, really heavy. He's 6'4", but he plays like a point guard in terms of how he sees the court, how he passes to his teammates. His handle is really tight, and he can shoot and score from pretty much anywhere. He drives a lot. He has a great mid-range game, and he's a dead-eye knockdown shooter with great range. So he's a kid I love watching at the high school level. Don't think he's quite ready for a Xavier offer, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. All right, Patrick asks, what role do you see Mackinday London having on next year's team? This is the best question you could be asking, Patrick, because I have no freaking idea. Like, I mean, no clue. He's the biggest enigma for this team going for the next couple of years. I don't think this year will decide his career either. The question is he like a Jeff Robinson that's always going to be that enigma and can never really fill out his talent? And I'm not saying he's even in that mold yet, because we just don't know. We haven't seen him. Or is he a guy that could be – he could be the best player in the entire program. And I don't say that lightly. I don't say that just because. He's really talented and a super unique player with his length and his skill. He can shoot it from the outside, and he's agile for his size at 6'10". So I think he could be a – I could see him having a huge role – going forward. I just don't know when that's going to be, and I don't know what it's going to be. I don't even really know what position he is necessarily, other than I'm sure he plays the four. But in terms of how he plays the four, I don't even really know. Is he a guy that's going to be, you know, playing on the perimeter the whole time and never really mixing up down low, or is he going to be more of a pick and pop guy? I'm not sure. I would imagine within Xavier's offense, they have some creative ways. This is the one thing I think the staff does a great job of, is catering their offense to the talent that they have. Whether, you know, they want to run the ball screen motion offense, they've run it, and they did a great job of doing that with like Markin too, which was, it was catered perfectly to having two point guard types that could really carry your offense. But then they had Jordan Crawford, and they went to the baseline runner offense and did some more motion stuff for him. And then Samaje, they had him, who was sort of like Jordan Crawford, but really didn't score well out of those baseline runner isolation situations. So they ran more just motion to get other defenders occupied so he could isolate one-on-one. Just let him go one-on-one from the wing. That was sometimes their best option with that offense. So I think they've done it. And then last year, obviously, the Matt Stainbrook, catering everything to him, who was completely different from anything they had done, really. They've done a great job of this. So I could see them making great use out of Mackinday London's skill set. I'm anxious to see what he can do. I love his athleticism. I love his tools. I just don't know. I don't know. Last year in practice, there were literally days where there were plays where he'd go on one end, make a play, and you're like, wow, he might be the best player in the gym. And then the next play, a walk-on was throwing him on his ass during a rebounding drill. So you just don't know with him. He had gained a lot of strength. He's still really skinny. I know he got at least somewhat stronger. It's going to be interesting to see. That's one of the biggest questions I have going into this year with practice, is where is Mackinday London at? Because I have no idea at this point. What Big East team do you consider a dark horse to contend in the conference, and what team do you think is the most overrated going into the season? I wish I would have done a little more research here on this one. I think one of the teams that I know Doug Tift and I have talked about, Doug Tift is a guy, you know, I'm sure you guys remember him from running Xavier Newswire, but a guy who really keeps up with the Big East Conference and always knows what's going on. One of the teams I've talked with him about that I think is going to be better than a lot of other people think is Providence. I don't think they lost quite as much as some others do. And also Seton Hall, I think, is going to be better than a lot of people expect. To answer your question, though, specifically, let me pull up our thread here real quick. And I think the team that I would have to go with as the sleeper would be Providence. I just think with the talent that they have, yes, they lost some pieces that were important to them, but the Chris Dunn coming back is such a big deal. They had some really young, talented guys that, like, you know, when you talk about Ben Bentile and Kyron Cartwright, even Jalen Lindsey was impressive. I think, you know, they've got the makings to be a team that's top half of the conference for sure. And I don't think a lot of people are projecting them to finish there. The team that I think is most overrated, that's a tough one. I would think probably Marquette. I see a lot of people putting them up there in that mix with, you know, the Xaviers and Butlers and Georgetowns, and not necessarily Villanova, but they kind of seem to be linked in that next tier with Xavier and Georgetown. I don't know that they are. I think Carlino was a huge part of what they did last year. And then they lost some really good just basketball players, glue guys that did a lot of things that went maybe unnoticed at times with Juan Anderson and Derek Wilson and Steve Taylor. And then obviously the Deontay Burton transfer was big for them as well. So Luke Fisher, it's okay. They still have some talent. I like some of the guys they have. I just don't know. Henry Ellenson, it's going to be really interesting because he's a top 10 player in the country. What can he bring? If he can really be a game changer for them and carry them right off the bat, then they are probably a top 5 team in the conference. But I could see them being the most overrated team that slips down to that bottom half easily. Thanks for the question. Troy, this is our final question, guys, that I have loaded up in the queue. So if you do have more, please load them in now. Otherwise, we'll maybe shut this thing down 10 minutes early or so. But if you have any more questions, I have no problem sticking around and answering them. This question from Troy, assuming current rosters, what do you think the landscape looks like for the Big East in 2015-16? Number of potential tournament teams? Teams bring conference down, preseason all Big East. Man, that's a lot of stuff that we were just kind of talking about there. And like I said, I have not really researched this stuff well enough before the season. But how many teams make the tournament? I think 4 teams make the tournament this year. I don't think it'll be quite as deep of a conference as it was last year. But I think there will be some teams that have a chance to be really good. Obviously, Villanova will be good again. I think they have a chance to make a run. Butler's that type of team still that they've always been, that scrappy team that has that, you know, makes the tournament run like we saw those 2 years in a row with Brad Stevens. They're that same team now, but they're all of a sudden landing more talented guys. So I think, you know, this Butler team has a chance that not only just this year, but they've got a chance to keep it rolling for a while here. I can't believe how well they performed last year with the roster they did. It makes me have a lot more faith in their coaching staff. So I think this year's Butler team could really make a run. And then Xavier and Georgetown are the other two teams kind of there in that top half of the conference that I think will probably make the tournament. And all of those teams have a chance, in my opinion, to be at least second weekend teams in the postseason. So preseason all Big East, I'm not even going to take a shot at. I'll post something on the board or on the website later on, but I just don't. I'll forget someone right now off the top of my head. That'd be too difficult without sitting down and looking a little bit more. So check back on musketeerreport.com, or again, maybe we'll do some more of these things and I will answer that question again at a later date. How much do you think Kaiser Gates can come in and contribute to next year's team? This one from Patrick. To be honest, I don't think they'll need Kaiser Gates to contribute a lot to next year's team. I think his skill set, the thing about him is his skill set is a little bit redundant to Trayvon Blewett and Mackenday London in terms of what he's going to bring, because he's going to play the four and he's going to be a stretch four that can also rebound and maybe defend multiple spots. But I don't know. Like, I don't know that Kaiser is going to be bigger or stronger. He's maybe an inch taller, but I don't know that he's going to be stronger or more physically ready than Trayvon Blewett is to defend four. So I don't know that he really gives you much more defensively than Trayvon's going to give you as a sophomore when he slides down to play that spot. And then in terms of his offense, again, he's a guy who next year as a freshman, I think he'll probably be mostly a spot-up shooter, kind of a guy. You know, I think he has the ability to do a lot more than that down the road. But right now, I think he's probably a spot-up shooter going into next year just as his freshman and while he's learning stuff. I think there's just going to be too many guys that have the same type of skills that are already ahead of him in the system. So, again, he's going to be battling for those sort of third, fourth minutes at the four spot with Mackende London, because you're already going to have Jalen, James, and Sean playing, you know, three guys for two spots at the four and five, playing a lot of the minutes. Then you're going to have Trayvon sliding down to the four and playing some more minutes there at the four. So there's not going to be a huge need for him to step in right away, although I do think he has the potential to be a good player down the road without question. Another question here from EJ. He asks, could you see UConn giving up on football and joining the Big East? What is the perception on the recruiting trail regarding the Big East versus the AAC? Could I see UConn giving up on football and joining the Big East? I really don't know. I think that might not be a bad idea for them, but I'm not smart enough to know how all the financials work out with those situations and where UConn is at financially, if that makes sense for them to do. For basketball, it certainly would make sense, especially if they can't get in any of these other conference expansions. I know they're talking about the Big 12 again. There might be movement on that front, and UC is really hopeful there. I just don't know that UConn is going to be in the mix for the next conference expansions. So if not, maybe giving up football and rejoining the Big East would be something they would consider. It's certainly an interesting option. It would be great for the Big East Conference, adding a big-time basketball program like that. It would just improve the status of the conference once again and its prestige. In terms of the perception on the recruiting trail regarding the Big East versus AAC, I would say like the AAC is just not it's sort of like the A-10 was for Xavier. You just don't recruit to the AAC. You don't talk about the AAC. You don't act like it exists. You never hear someone saying like, oh yeah, well, the AAC is a conference I'm interested in, or, you know, a recruit saying, well, they play in the AAC, so that intrigues me. That does not happen. Whereas the Big East, it still does. Like, and maybe this will wear off at some point because the Big East isn't quite what it was, but you got to understand a lot of these kids now that are they watched the Big East as it was the Big East in a big time conference. And then their parents, more importantly, grew up on the Big East when the Big East was it in terms of college basketball. So I think it's the Big East has really helped Xavier already. I think Rashid Gaston was a guy where, you know, he visited Dayton and Xavier, and I think he was only going to go to a school that was in Ohio. So it kind of came down to those two schools, I think. And there was just really no, he wanted to really improve the level of basketball and his exposure that he was going to get. And to him, it was a no-brainer. A-10 versus Big East, go to the Big East. It's not. So I think the AAC is kind of similar to the A-10, where you have a couple programs with the UCs and the Memphises where they can recruit by themselves okay. And it's like they're not taking a huge hit because they're in the AAC necessarily, but it's certainly not something that's helping them on the recruiting trail at all. It's not something you hear talked about much. And it's not something that those coaches are selling. I can guarantee you that. It's not like Mick Cronin landed those three recruits this week by giving them the sales pitch on how good of a conference the AAC was or the places they're going to get to travel to in the AAC. That's not how this works. So again, I think there's still some programs in the AAC that are like UC, like SMU, like Memphis, that can get the job done and still be competitors on a national stage. But the conference as itself, yeah, not in great shape basketball wise. All right, this one again from Muskie Man XU72. He asks, what does Jalen need to do to dominate in game this year? What has he been doing to improve this summer? He's been up in Detroit working out. And doing what he always does, I guess, to develop, working on his skills, working on his body, getting stronger. What does he need to do to dominate in game this year? Rebound a lot and score a lot and be bigger and more athletic than other guys he plays against, which is kind of what Jalen's good at doing. I'm not sure exactly what you're looking for here, but I think Jalen is going to have a huge year. I mean, he's really good. He broke out last year. I think, to me, he was a dominant player at the end of last year that just wasn't playing on a team that needed him to dominate. This year, he's going to be more of a go-to option, and now he's not going to be a guy that you run the offense through like Matt Steinberg. I don't think that should be the expectation for Jalen, but they are going to give him probably, you know, 3-4 more touches per game in the post with his back, or per half rather, with his back to the basket, giving an opportunity to try to score. And then they're going to continue to run a lot of actions for him. That was one thing they did great last year, whether it was slipping off the screens in the lane or in the ball screen motion offense when he was there throwing him lobs. There was a lot of things they did that were just small actions within the flow of the offense to free Jalen up for easy buckets. And he has such exceptional physical tools that he creates a lot of those opportunities. You just really have to be looking for him, and he can do a lot of it by himself. So I think the staff does a great job of using his tools to the best of their ability without having to run everything through him. And I think that'll continue this year, but I expect Jalen to be a double-double machine this year. I think as long as he stays out of foul trouble, maybe that's the biggest thing. Harnessing his emotions, staying out of foul trouble, being smart on the court is probably the biggest thing he has to do to dominate. But in terms of his game, I think he's already there. I thought he was dominant at the end of last season. I think he's going to have a great, probably final season for Xavier, to be honest. There was some noise about this question from Brian Martins again. There was some noise about the lack of an NBA first rounder from the Big East. Is the talent trending up or down? Well, I think for the guys that were already in the Big East, obviously, you know, the schools, the talent that was already in place, it wasn't great because obviously those guys, there was no first rounders. But you also gotta understand, Chris Dunn decided not to go. I mean, that would have been a first round talent right there. DSR, I don't think he would have been a first-round guy by any stretch of the imagination, but he also didn't go. I mean, there were some NBA guys from the Big East that just decided not to come out this year. So I don't think it's quite – I don't think that tells the whole story of the talent from last year. But going forward, I think the talent's going to trend up. I think all these schools have done a better job recruiting than I actually expected them to, and I think that the conference is in a good spot for a few years to come here with the way – I mean, just look at what Marquette's done on the recruiting trail. Look what Villanova's continued to do. Xavier has done a really good job recruiting. Their 2014 class was great, and I think the Kaiser Gates was nice getting. 2016 is going to be another good class for them. So I think the talent will trend up going forward, but I get your point certainly about last year not having the NBA first rounders. Again, Chris Dunn, though, by the end of last season was being talked about as potentially a lottery pick, and I think he could very well be that after this season. So it's a little bit better than the NBA draft would lead you to believe. And here's a follow-up from Brian on that question. Follow-up regarding NBA talent in the Big East. Besides Dunn from Providence, which obviously I mentioned a few times, any likely NBA first-rounders from the Big East this year? That's a good question. I'm trying to think of who the candidates would be. It's going to be interesting to see what happens for the Villanova guys. Like, I don't think Archie Diacono is by any – I would be interested to see where he lands, whether he's an European guy or if he's going to be in the draft. I don't think he's a first-rounder by any means. But Butler, I don't know. I mean, I don't think they necessarily have that type of guy. Xavier might be one of those – teams. When you talk about Jalen Reynolds, I think he could definitely have a chance with a big junior season to be a first round pick. If not, I think it'll be a high second round pick. DSR, I don't expect to be a first round pick, but I do expect him to get drafted. And you never know, he might be able to slip into that bottom of the first round with an incredible year. I just don't know that his physical tools really equate to him being a big time NBA talent, probably more of a second round guy. Yeah, Marquette, not really. I know. I'm trying to look through some of these rosters. I don't necessarily see surefire first round talents other than Dunn. But again, that's something probably I'll talk about a little bit more closer to the season when I've had a chance to look over the rosters a little better. All right, hold on one second here. Troy has a good question. In the podcast, you mentioned the influence Mario has on this program through recruiting, social media, etc. What is his career path, and is he a lifer at X? What is his career path like? Is what he did before Xavier? I don't remember. I don't know. I think he was a student, and did he get involved at Xavier right away? I think he might have. Yeah, he's a lifer, no question. I don't think he's ever leaving Xavier. He's a GCL guy, and I think he'll be sticking around Cincinnati for his entire life without a doubt. I'm sorry. I'm not real sure what his career path was other than I think he started pretty much right away with Xavier and just kind of worked his way into what he's doing now. and Bob Schnur here with the final question. If you have any more questions, guys, we are about in an hour, but I will answer any more questions that you do have if you have something else you want to fit in. Otherwise, this will be the final question here from Bob. Bob asks, does Samaje have a chance at the NBA or should he head to Europe? I don't think it's time to head to Europe yet for Samaje. I think as long as he is able to make a team again, he's got the chance to, you know, go play summer league and then possibly make a D league team again, which I'm sure he will because he was made the all-star team, was really good last year in the D league. I think he still has a chance. The D league is a little bit different now than it used to be. It used to be almost a kiss of death. You didn't make the team. It just wasn't going to happen. You're going to live a crappy life in the D league for no money. You still don't get much money, but things are changing a little bit more and teams are using the D league more as a minor league system to stash players. They changed the rules where within their first 3 years of their career, a player can be sent down as many times as a team wants to do it. All the teams have a relationship with a D league team, all the NBA teams that is, and they can send down a player within the first 3 years of their career as many times as they want. And then after the 3 years, they only have to get the player to agree to it to send them down. So they can use it more like a minor league system now. And I think that's the direction that it's trending. So I think it would be good for Samaje to stay in there for at least another year, feel it out, see if he can get a 10-day for someone and stick around a little bit because he has enough talent to potentially play on a team in the NBA. It's just going to take him finding the right fit and the right opportunity for the right organization, someone that likes his ability. I mean, he is a talented guy. Now, if that doesn't work out or midway through the year, he's just not getting any traction, then yeah, absolutely. Head over to Europe, go make six figures, which I think he'll certainly do, and he'll be a great player over there. One of the things about Samaje that I don't think people realize is Xavier was able to land him because he never wanted to leave Cincinnati. I mean, he did not want to leave his hometown. I don't think he's a guy that just leaving the country and living in a foreign land would be easy for. I think he would struggle with it a little bit more. Not necessarily struggle with it, but just not like it as much as some other guys would. So I think that for him especially, he's probably going to delay that as long as he can. All right, and one more from MuskyManXU72. He asks, Xavier Simpson, what are his strengths and weaknesses? Percentage chance X gets him. I don't do percentages. Those on the board know that. You either 100% get someone or you 100% do not, which would be zero, I guess. And what are his strengths and weaknesses? His strengths is he's a super passer, super defender, really good point guard. I mean, knows how to run the team, knows how just a great leader. And the best thing that recently that I've seen from him is at the NBA players camp, his jump shooting was the best I've ever seen from the outside. Now he always has a really good mid-range game, but when you add on top of that, the ability to step behind a screen and knock down a three, which he was doing at the NBA players camp, that completely changes what he brings to the table on the offensive end. So I've always said this about him in Xavier terms. He's worst case scenario, D Davis, without the weaknesses that D Davis has as much. Because I mean, he's not a shooter. So in that regard, he is kind of like D, but I don't think he's a little bit more athletic, a little bit more explosive and a little bit stronger and tougher than D was. So I think that would help him and negate some of the other weaknesses that D had other than just shooting. I mean, that's really it. I mean, Xavier's a really nice player. I think, you know, in terms of landing him as a point guard, it would be you couldn't do much better in terms of floor generals in the country. Now, as a scorer, he's never going to be a guy that averages 15 points a game. But with the roster that Xavier already has in place and what they'd be asking him to do, I think he'd fit in really well for what they want. Appreciate the question. All right. Well, since we don't have any more questions, and we are over an hour, I appreciate all you guys for checking in and joining us tonight. I think it went pretty well. I'll try to get some feedback from the message board, see how the subscribers liked it. If it went well, we will do this again. I don't know when, but again, appreciate you joining us. This stuff only works if you guys participate. So thanks for coming out tonight, and we'll talk to you next time.